I think my talk will fit perfectly into the last speaker's because my research is in rural counties in South Georgia. Let's see, I want to let you know that I have no financial relationships, especially with Merck Pharmaceuticals or anyone else affiliated with HPV vaccination, and I have no conflict of interest to report. The purpose or the beginning of this research began in my background as a pediatric nurse practitioner, and I had the joy of really working in schools, elementary schools and middle schools, and finding that school nurses were right on the edge of primary care prevention for lots of things. In many of the rural counties where I have worked, the school nurse may have been the only primary care provider that child might see because the resources are so sparse. In Georgia right now, I'm working in one county, Screven County, where there is no pediatrician. The distance to travel from one place just to simply get to a hospital may be in excess of 60 to 90 miles. So school-based research was important not only for the kids but also to engage the community. And I found that when I moved to Georgia, I looked at the SEER data. I had begun my HPV research down in Florida International University in Miami in 2007 when the vaccine first came out. And so when I moved to Georgia, I looked at the SEER data and I found these small pockets of rural communities where there were skyrocketing rates of cervical cancer and also other types of cancers that may have been related to HPV infection. And I also found, of course, that the vaccine rates were extremely low. So taking a look at the context, you people who had their background, all of you in public health probably recognize this. The inner rectangles there are, of course, social cognitive theory, and the ones on the outside are the epidemiologic triangle. And for many of us, we, you know, just makes common sense that our environment and all these different diseases, this would all kind of cogitate, and we would say, yeah, absolutely, you should vaccinate your child against the HPV vaccine. But many of us are very familiar with the national debate about the vaccine, and that led to the purpose of this study. What I wanted to do was to determine parents' perceived vulnerability of HPV infection. We know as researchers that just because someone has knowledge of a health behavior or health promotion behavior doesn't necessarily mean they'll do it. My colleagues in tobacco cessation have been trying to help people stop smoking for years, and it's extremely difficult. So I really wanted to focus on this perceived vulnerability and also to look at who is actually vaccinating their children with the HPV vaccine in these counties. Because, someone was doing it, not a whole lot of people, but some of them were. I think when I first started discussing this, I was sharing this earlier, I did a lot of, just kind of old-fashioned windshield surveys in these counties. I met informally with people, really trying to find a community leader or a gatekeeper, because these rural counties are very isolated. People in these counties are, they're not very open to strangers, especially people like coming down from Atlanta. And so one of the first things I did was to try to give them some additional information about HPV. Many of them thought that the only way HPV was transmitted was through sexual intercourse, and it's not. For those of you who don't know, HPV has over 35 different DNA subtypes, and the most frequent way it is passed from one person to the other. As I teach my students, I always tell them, okay, imagine this. You're outside, it's cold, and you're rubbing your hands together to get warm, okay? And the time it takes you to get your hands warmed up, theoretically, you could have passed HPV from one person to the other. And so when parents understood that their children could be virginal and they could still contract the HPV virus, then I started to see almost a change in their thought. I always use this slide to teach them as well and tell them that the soft finger-like portion of this slide is really HPV. And that's not HPV on a cervix, that's HPV inside a person's mouth. And the folks in this county, many of them don't have access to primary care. So they might live their entire life and never see a dentist. Okay, this is the United States of America. I know, a little shocking, but it's true. And many of the women may or may not ever get a pap smear. So, after I engaged these gatekeepers, I put together a little 5 or 6 slide presentation, met with the school superintendent, met with the school principal, met with the school nurse, met with the folks at the PTA, and began a descriptive kind of study where I was really very happy that in the three counties we had 530 parents to complete an anonymous survey that I had developed based on the health belief model. And we're also very happy to report that the Chromebox Alpha on that is nice and strong, maintaining a 0.96. And once again, we really were looking at vulnerability, not so much perceived benefits or perceived barriers, because in Georgia, in these rural underserved counties, the Vaccines for Children's program is present, and so the vaccine can be subsidized. So it was really talking to this, engaging this very conservative group of people, giving them education and getting feedback. So I'm going to go ahead just a little bit. This is all preliminary data. So initially we developed a knowledge composite score and a positive attitudes and beliefs composite score just to see if our theory of perceived vulnerability or positive attitudes and beliefs really held true. And our group, you'll see, is quite a large sample of African Americans, very religiously conservative, and the income level you'll see there. We have a great deal of people living on $15,000 a year or less, and about 60% of the populations in these combined three counties, I think 60% we've calculated, we're talking about families living on $30,000 a year or less. Go back. So when we started building our logistic regression models, we used a stepwise approach. We tried to include all the variables. I know 530 parents seems like a big number, but it was spread out over three counties. It was a reasonable response rate of about 40%, and once again, these folks really don't care to even fill out an anonymous survey, and I forgot to mention that the school superintendent had to approve the survey. So I was very limited about what I could ask. So I had built my survey, and one of my collaborators, or I should say one of my mentors, Ralph D. Clemente, said, oh, you know, come on, Tammy, let's tack on this, 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 and this, and get some HIV stuff, let's just tack on that. And the school superintendents were going, no. You can do this 42-item little survey here, but all this other stuff about sex, no, we're not gonna talk about that. Anyway, in our initial results, you'll see that positive attitudes and beliefs really is statistically significant. So it was the parents that had positive attitudes and beliefs about the vaccine who were more likely to vaccinate their kids. In addition, when the CDC came out and approved the vaccine for boys in December of 2009, and I know everyone in this room may or may not be aware, but the ACIP has now come out with a recommendation as of October 25th that young boys should be vaccinated, we did some preliminary findings here with, I had started collecting data last January on sons. We found out that more mothers than fathers would vaccinate their sons. I attributed that really to the sample itself because we had so many more mothers participate. But what was very striking was that parents who self-identified their religious preference as Baptist would vaccinate their sons with the HPV vaccine. And this is pretty striking compared to all the previous research that came out in 2008 and 2009 saying that people who are religiously conservative would just not vaccinate their kids with this vaccine. And that's really not what I'm finding. The other thing that really held true with our hypothesis was that parents and caregivers who chose to vaccinate their children had significantly higher scores on our composite measure of positive attitudes and beliefs. We thought that was very striking, and that for every 1 point increase in positive attitudes and beliefs score, parents were 2.28 times more likely to vaccinate their children. So, what are the next steps? Well, we decided to go ahead and conduct focus groups. So, this fall we conducted focus groups in all three counties, and we're in the middle of conducting some individual parent interviews to make sure that the quantitative data is truly informed. Are we really seeing what we've got there? We have now, because we've used a lot of community engagement approaches, we have a lot of people very interested in increasing HPV vaccination, and we're looking at developing a comprehensive adolescent cancer prevention program where the HPV vaccine is just one piece of a cancer prevention program, looking at tobacco cessation, skin protection, you know, and those kinds of things altogether. So I think that's about it. And of course, I could not do this without my collaborators and without funding from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, who's graciously funded this work for 3 years, and of course, without the school officials, the community, and the parents who participate, I would have never been able to get this work done. So I thank them and my colleagues.